You are listening to the ninth installment of IEEE Talk Software Process, where experts interview experts. I'm Scott Roy Smith, your host here at IEEE Computer Society Studios in gorgeous Southern California. If you have listened to previous episodes, you've heard me warn that this podcast is only for software professionals who need mission-critical, proven, and in-depth implementation of software quality, measurement, risk management, and Lean Six Sigma. If you are looking for casual listening, this is not it. The content of this podcast is reviewed by peers for accuracy, so you can count on results. Just add water and apply according to directions. So if you're ready, let's dig in. Today, our two experts are returning from previous episodes of this podcast series. Douglas B. Smith has been on this podcast before, and this time we'll be interviewed about how to implement Lean Six Sigma. Doug, welcome to the call.
Thanks, Scott.
Doug will be interviewed by Susan Cathy Land, his co-author in the Practical Support Using IEEE Software Engineering Standards book series. Cathy is also 2009 IEEE Computer Society President-elect. Cathy, welcome to the call, and please take it away.
Thank you, Scott. This podcast is the second in our series on Lean Six Sigma. The first IEEE Lean Six Sigma How-To addressed the use of standards and Lean Six Sigma to improve software processes, and was addressed to practitioners already working with Lean Six Sigma. This podcast, Beginning Lean Six Sigma, is in response to a request for a prequel to describe the basics of Lean Six Sigma for those that are encountering it for the first time or are on their start of their Lean Six Sigma journey. Doug, can you start by describing just what Lean Six Sigma is for everyone?
Sure, Kathy. The short definition is that Lean Six Sigma is a team-based continuous improvement methodology. So if you have a problem that needs a tiger team, Lean Six Sigma give you the tools and the process to make that team effective. In addition to that problem solving, Lean Six Sigma is also a process improvement methodology. It was created from a set of complementary improvement methodologies, including Lean, Six Sigma, and usually a little theory of constraints as well.
Okay. Let's walk through each of those components and talk about what they bring to Lean Six Sigma, starting with Six Sigma.
Okay. Well, as you know, Kathy, Six Sigma started at Motorola in the 1980s as they sought a way to achieve a tenfold improvement in quality. It's evolved over time to include what I now see as four key components. First and foremost is the DMAIC problem-solving process. DMAIC is an acronym for the steps in that process: define, measure, analyze, improve, and control. So a Six Sigma team will precisely define the problem, measure the behavior of the problem, analyze the data to determine root causes, they implement improvements, and then they control the process to maintain those gains. So that's the first component, DMAIC. The second Six Sigma component is a measure called Process Sigma that can be used to quantify the capability of almost any process. So this gives you a consistent way to measure process performance across all parts of your organization, whether it's software development or back office support. The third component is the Six Sigma infrastructure, which includes the training and certification of your cadre of green belts and black belts and master black belts, and then a network of process owners and champions. Finally, the fourth element is quality improvement tools, including a number of statistical analysis techniques that are really the heart of Six Sigma. So to sum it up, Six Sigma is a team-based methodology to solve problems by reducing variation and improving quality.
Okay, thanks, Doug. So what about Lean?
Well, in the simplest terms, Lean is all about reducing waste. Lean started at Toyota in post-World War II Japan and really became widely known in the U.S. through the work of researchers at MIT. Womack and Jones, in their Lean Thinking book, list five principles that define Lean. And in enumerating these principles, there are three words, flow, pull, and value, that have special meaning in the context of Lean. So I'll come back to those in a minute. But those five principles are, first, you specify value by product. Two, you identify the value stream for each of those products. Three, you make the addition of value to that product flow without interruptions over that entire value stream, from raw materials all the way to finished products. So some of the things that consume time and resources are the ones that add that value that's there at the end. So we want to make that flow in a continuous stream throughout that whole process. The fourth principle is to let the customer pull value from the producer, and the fifth is to pursue perfection.
Okay, well, before we get back to those keywords, Doug, how about wrapping up the introduction with a summary? You had mentioned theory of constraints.
Sure. Theory of constraints comes from the work of Goldratt and is published in his book titled The Goal. At the simplest level, it's a five-step process that focuses on finding and mitigating the constraints that are bottlenecks for the overall goal of the organization. So the steps are, one, to identify the system's constraint, and two, you exploit the system's constraint, meaning you maximize the throughput through that bottleneck. Three is to subordinate other processes to the constraint. So you reduce suboptimization in other processes so that you fully use the constraint. Four is to elevate that constraint, meaning make it more capable so that it's not quite such a bottleneck. And then five is to repeat the cycle. What's the next thing that limits the system now that you've broken its previous constraint?
Okay, it sounds like each of these components, Lean, Six Sigma, and Theory of Constraints, was developed as a complete methodology on its own. So why combine these?
Well, Kathy, you don't have to. You could make process improvement or make improvement progress with any of those components, but there is a synergy from combining them, and you get both better results from the integrated whole and you avoid some pitfalls. The components all have common roots, and they offer strengths in different areas, so they're both very compatible and very complementary to each other. So Lean Six Sigma typically uses the infrastructure from Six Sigma and the DMAIC problem-solving process, and then incorporates Lean concepts and tools where they're appropriate. In comparison to Six Sigma by itself, Lean Six Sigma typically provides solutions that are faster and have less waste. In comparison to Lean alone, Lean Six Sigma has stronger governance, which gives you a more strategic focus, and an infrastructure that really helps with institutionalization, to getting that continuous improvement mindset spread throughout the entire organization.
Okay. Well, earlier you said that Lean has special meaning for the words flow, pull, and value. Would you like to explain those a little more?
Sure. Let's start with value, because that's at the heart of Lean. Lean looks at every step in the process and classifies it in one of three value states. It's either value-adding, it's non-value-adding, or it's non-value-adding but necessary. So an activity is value-adding only if it meets all three of the following criteria. It has to transform the product or service. It can't just be a pass-along. A reasonable and knowledgeable customer would be willing to pay for it. So if they had the menu of all the steps, they could pick out the ones that they thought were valuable. That's necessary for it to be a value step in Lean terms. And then finally, it has to be done right the first time. So stuff that doesn't meet that criteria, that consumes resources but creates no value in the eyes of the customer, is either that non-value-added category of pure waste or kind of the yellow zone, necessary but non-value-adding. And Lean seeks to reduce the last two of those, but especially the waste. And you may also hear it called by its Japanese name, which is Muda. So now let's talk about flow. One of the key insights of Lean is that batch and queue processes create waste. And unfortunately, we as humans tend to have some innate disposition for doing things in batches. It's kind of the way we normally set stuff up. And then flow, on the other hand, seeks to have a single item move from value-adding step to value-adding step without any interruption, no batching or non-value-adding steps in between. Our third term then, pull, works in conjunction with that flow. So anytime we produce a batch of inventory, right, we've just created waste, as we said. So what we want to do is have that flow be triggered by a customer request and produce just in time. So responding to that downstream need instead of developing in advance is what we mean by pull. It's the notion of just in time.
Okay, so you described what Lean Six Sigma is and talked about the virtues of single piece flow instead of batch and queue. So who uses these techniques? And in what areas? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. In the definition, I talked about the founders of Lean and Six Sigma, Toyota and Motorola. So both of those are still going strong with these techniques. Many people have heard Jack Welch, referred to as manager of the century, for the work he did at GE in the 90s. And he had a number one bestseller where he described that process and credited Six Sigma as being the single most important factor in the $100 billion increase in GE revenues over that decade. And so although both Lean and Six Sigma come out of manufacturing, you see them widely applied. They're applied in the services industry and in markets as diverse as healthcare, governments ranging from the city level to full countries, both in the U.S. and abroad. You see it in all branches of the U.S. military. In the commercial sector, over 87 of the Fortune 100 have some form of Lean Six Sigma implemented.
Okay. Are there any other topics I ought to study once I've learned the Lean Six Sigma basics?
Well, once you've got those, and we mentioned theory of constraints earlier, you'd also be interested in the application of theory of constraints to scheduling. It uses the same scientific methods to look at both project management and scheduling. And so Goldratt has a book called Critical Chain that discusses that. Another common thing we use in Lean Six Sigma is the brainstorming technique to come up with creative solutions to problems. So that's a little bit unstructured, and if you want to be sure about coming out with a quality result from that, there is a more formal process to do it. Altshuler's work on TRIZ, T-R-I-Z, is the theory of inventive problem solving, and TRIZ is its acronym in Russian. He developed it based on an empirical study of the patterns of inventiveness and creativity. And so it's far more effective at guaranteeing you a truly technical innovation than just simple brainstorming.
Okay. Now, one thing I've always been curious about, is there a relationship between the capability and maturity model integration in Lean Six Sigma?
Well, sure. Many software development organizations using Lean Six Sigma also have a CMMI-based improvement program. For us at Northrop Grumman, for example, we have legacy organizations within the company that have strong backgrounds separately, some in Lean, some in Six Sigma, and some in CMMI. And we've seen that each of those has an advantage that speeds their organizational process improvement in our combined competitive excellence program when they go to do our integrated Lean Six Sigma. So, you know, all of those, the CMMI and Lean Six Sigma, share the same Deming and Schuert quality improvement routes, and there's especially a lot of commonality between Six Sigma and CMMI Level 4, so a lot of synergy there. In organizations that we see implementing it, if they came from Six Sigma, they'll typically use Lean Six Sigma teams to implement the processes for CMMI, and they find that many of their Six Sigma outputs are very useful artifacts in a CMMI SCAMPI assessment. On the other side, we see mature CMMI organizations go to adopt Lean Six Sigma and find that it's a natural extension of their CMMI work towards defect prevention and quantitative management.
Okay. So we've talked about CMMI. What about ISO? If I've got an ISO 9001 certification and the auditors are happy, do I need Lean Six Sigma?
Well, the answer is the classic Lean Six Sigma answer that your black belt will always give you. It depends. ISO and Lean Six Sigma have slightly different purposes, but typically they're mutually supportive. ISO 9000 will be used to establish your quality system and maintain a level of quality, whereas Lean Six Sigma is more focused on improving the processes so that you can increase quality, speed, or cost effectiveness. And you often have different drivers for the two. The pressure for ISO 9001 is typically external, from customers wanting you either maintain your level of quality or, you know, continuously improve that in an incremental fashion. Most of the desire for Lean Six Sigma, on the other hand, tends to come internally. Companies internally wanting to achieve some cost reduction or to trim waste so that they've got more speed and agility to react to the changing market and customer needs. In the end, though, to be broadly deployable and sustainable over the long term, Lean Six Sigma fundamentally requires the kind of stable processes that you get by going through an ISO 9001 process.
Okay, so how do organizations implement Lean Six Sigma? Is there a standard or a best practice or a wide range of approaches?
Well, there's no standard, Kathy, but there is a best practice that applies in many cases. And unfortunately, we find that in other cases, and in fact, even in many of the cases where the best practice would apply, there are a wide variety of approaches we see in use. And so I kind of categorize these along a continuum. My continuum ranges on the low end from guerrilla to tactical to strategic to cultural.
Wow, that does sound like quite a range. So what's the best practice approach? And where would you say that it would fit on that continuum?
Well, the best practice is to tie the implementation to an organization-wide change in attitude with the personal involvement of senior management. The folks that do organizational change management tell us that this type of change is most effective when it's driven by a burning platform, a widely recognized need across the organization, a situation where it's clear to all involved that survival depends on a change to the status quo. That's the burning platform. You can't stay where you are. You got to change. And that's the approach recommended by a large number of Lean Six Sigma proponents, like Michael George of the George Group and Jim Womack of the Lean Institute. And the Lean Advancement Initiative, lean.mit.edu, which used to be the Lean Aerospace Initiative, has a transition to Lean roadmap. It's one of the best established and well-documented approaches to getting there. And it uses that best practice approach where you have the burning platform and you're pushing for strategic change across the organization. So I would put this on the continuum somewhere between strategic and cultural.
Okay. So what distinguishes strategic from cultural?
Well, the strategic part comes from the involvement of senior leadership, the initiative being scoped to cover the whole organization, and its application to the key goals of the organization. So the most famous implementation is that one that I talked about with Jack Welch, where he created Six Sigma to be in the key to GE revenues. You know, they had everybody in the company trained, indoctrinated into Six Sigma and used it for everything in the company. Kind of the lean counterpart is what's called Hoshin Kanri, or policy deployment, where the key thing is that you're tying your Lean Six Sigma program to your strategic directives of your organization and using Lean as an essential part of achieving your business goals. The most famous implementation on the cultural side is Toyota. Lean is based on the Toyota Production System, TPS. But some of the companies that have faithfully implemented TPS haven't seen the same level of results as Toyota. And the major reason is the culture known as the Toyota Way. Those implementations that have been most successful have incorporated those cultural aspects as an overriding part of the implementation, with a key respect for people and with quality improvement being more of an individual and organization-wide behavior than just a separate program or initiative.
Okay, so that's the recommended approach at the high end of the spectrum. What about the other approaches you mentioned, guerrilla and tactical? Those, I would assume, were at the lower end of the spectrum?
Yes, Kathy, and across all the implementations we see, this lower end has a much lower percentage of success. You know, but if you're not at the top end, if you don't have the commitment of senior leadership, if you don't have or can't create the burning platform for change, then you're forced into some of these guerrilla and tactical approaches. In some cases, the goal at this end of the spectrum is to create an island of lean or run a Lean Six Sigma project that has enough hard dollar savings results to convince upper management to make the commitment and state that case for change that allows you to use one of the less risky rollout methods at the high end. Those, by islands of lean, by the way, I mean where an entire subgroup or site embraces lean, not the entire organization or not the entire value stream of your product. And these islands can serve as proof and to justify wider rollouts, but they're usually not sustainable on their own over the long term, and they won't lead to organizational change on their own. Then down at the guerrilla end of the spectrum, Lean Six Sigma is typically driven by individual employees or a project manager on a project without support of the entire organization. So you typically see it as a tiger team using the DMAIC problem-solving process or a tool like Kaizen to address local points of pain. Those kind of implementations are often just strictly tool-based implementations, and those tools are powerful enough that you get some benefit, but without the synergy and multiplicative impacts you see with the higher-end approaches. So stepping up from that a little bit, you get the tactical level, and that is typically an island of lean. You'll have a pilot site or a division that'll be a trial, perhaps, or pilot for a larger implementation. And you'll get the tools-based approaches where you run ad hoc DMAIC teams as problems pop up. On the lean side, these tactical implementations are usually based on value stream mapping, and they'll let the results of that VSM analysis serve as a plan for the program.
Okay, so once you've selected an implementation model, what's next? Is training the best way for folks to learn and move forward?
Well, probably, Kathy. although Lean and Six Sigma are increasingly integrated in the way they're taught today, traditionally there were different paths, and that can still be a factor if you're concentrating more on one component than the other. Six Sigma has always been based on a very formal set of courses with certification and a belt based on both completion of training and participation and satisfactory completion of a Six Sigma project. So most companies that are doing that will train and certify internally. If you don't have that as an option, the best approach on the outside, at least in the U.S., is the American Society for Quality, ASQ. They offer a very well-recognized training and certification program. On the Lean side, traditionally it's been learned by doing as opposed to learned by going to class, being mentored by a sensei or teacher. And especially because the core concepts of Lean are counterintuitive to many of us, having a sensei or a Lean Six Sigma Master Black Belt is especially helpful for implementations that are focused on Lean. So in addition to those kind of training and mentoring things, there is a wide range of books available both for self-study and for ongoing use with your Lean Six Sigma teams, including one that Kathy and I wrote, Practical Support for Lean Six Sigma Software Process Definition, which is available from the IEEE Computer Society and Amazon.com.
Okay, well, thank you, Doug. I really appreciate your time today, and I think this has been very informative. Again, I think the content that you provided will help lay the foundation for people who are interested in Lean Six Sigma basics.
Thanks very much, and I encourage people to take that first step on their Lean Six Sigma journey.
Thank you, Douglas B. Smith and Susan Cathy Land, for your advice on implementing Lean Six Sigma. You've already mentioned the book I was thinking about regarding practical support for Lean Six Sigma process definition using IEEE software engineering standards. So that wraps it up for this installment. Thank you for listening to IEEE Talk Software Process. We would like to hear from you. Please email podcasts@computer.org to give us your comments and feedback, or visit us at computer.org/podcasts. Until next time, this is Scott Roy Smith saying, may your advancement be manifest.